This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I'm living in a snow globe.
Are you?
Yeah. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous. Big, flat, fat, fluffy flakes are just drifting down, and it's adding to the snow we got a few days ago. So, oh, yeah, the gardens are purring.
Yeah, and I think you are getting the weather that we got yesterday north of Toronto in the Collingwood area. We had those big, fluffy snowflakes, and I said, okay, we got enough. Send it to Charlie Dobbin.
No. No, it's never enough. I mean, unless your person has to commute somewhere long distances, Then it's always too much. But for me, who's mostly homebound and, you know, county bound, it's fine. To the point that, you know, dragged out the cross-country skis yesterday for the first time in 3 years and went for a little 5-kilometer ski, which was lovely.
Excellent. Yeah, it was one of those days that we shoveled the driveway twice yesterday. Mm. You know, not big amounts, but, you know, in the morning, at the end of the driveway and the whole driveway needed to be done. And then in the evening, we did the same again, just, you know, just sort of skimming off the top. But yeah. And I laughed this morning. We had a small army of squirrels at the base of my bird feeder this morning, trying to find all of the seeds that had blown off the platform feeder earlier in the week when we had the strong winds. And so then they pop their heads up and they're all got these faces full of snuff. They're quite funny.
Yeah. Well, better that they eat them than they grow, right? Yeah. You'll have a forest of sunflowers if they don't get eaten.
That's right. Yeah, no, I'm happy that they clean up the mess at the bottom. Listen, I'm going to give out the numbers, okay? And then if you have any announcements, we'll do that. But we would love for you to give us a call if you have any indoor gardening questions, outdoor gardening questions, whatever you got. Number to call if you live in Toronto is 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still in the province of Ontario, here you go. Here's the number, 1-866-740-4740. And do let our producer Owen know if you are a first-time caller, because then you know it. I'll give you the garden wings. We would love for you to call often. We'd love for you to call early, and we would really, really appreciate. And I will be a dictator on this, one question per call, okay? Please, which allows everybody a chance.
And if you're wondering why you want garden wings, think about it. When you have your garden wings, you can go up and get a whole macro view of your garden and just get a whole different perspective, which is something that it's kind of like, you know, seeing the forest for the trees, right? We tend to see one thing at a time, and one plant and one insect that we can't identify or whatever. It's all so micro oriented. Often when we're out in the garden, we're so focused, but the wings give you that big picture. And that's really, really important when it comes to the design of your garden and how it flows and how it feels.
You become like a little drone.
Exactly.
Oh, and before we go to break, of course, today is Robbie Burns Day. So happy Robbie Burns Day to you. And maybe if we have time today, we can talk briefly, if you want to put in your two cents, anything about thistles, which are, of course, a very Scottish, you know, and if I can, I don't know if I can grow them in my garden or not, but I think some would regard them as a weed, of course, but, you know.
One never knows, because one person's weed is another person's food.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. That's hard to identify, like to categorize permanently. But just a quick reminder, 2 weeks from today, the Orchid Show and Sale is on in Toronto at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. That's both Saturday and Sunday, February 8th and 9th. Saturday noon till 5, Sunday 11 till 4. General admission is $10, but trust me, it is totally worth the $10. And then, of course, there is the option to pay a premium and get in there before the general public if you're a photographer or a, you know, somebody who really, really wants the space and the opportunity to look up close and personal, because it's a pretty busy show. When you do go in as a general person, no big backpacks, no tripods, because it's just too crowded.
You got it. Okay, and it is a great show. I was there last year. Loved it. Okay, it is time for us to take our first break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. Lots of room on the phone lines. Give us a call. Don't be shy. Remember, call early. Don't leave it to the last 10 minutes because then we might not be able to get to you. That has happened, okay?
Once or twice.
Once or twice, yeah. Numbers to call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Okay.
And just while we have some time, I'll remind everybody that I mentioned the Orchid Show in 2 weeks. So in 3 weeks from today, we start getting into some of the seedy Saturdays, which is, you know, seedy seed exchanges, seed purchasing, seed information, great speakers, lots of great accoutrement if you need to buy any, you know, seeding trays and seed mix and that sort of thing. So on Saturday, February 15th, the Northumberland Master Gardeners are meeting. So that's near me, just north and west of where I live. They're meeting in the Masonic Hall from 11 until 3 at 54 Toronto Road in Port Hope. And the Master Gardeners of Niagara are meeting the same day from 10 until 3 at the Meridian Community Center in Fond Hill.
Okay, okay. You said something before the break that reminded me. You know, you were saying what one person's weed. You said is another person's. You said I think food.
Food or flower? Yeah, I mean flower. Think of dandelions.
Yeah. So, and you know what? And you reminded me of something that really put that in my brain a number of years ago. My dad, who's been gone now for the better part of a decade, he lived the last 20 years of his life down in Florida. And I remember going down there on one of the trips to see him and going through one of the subdivisions. And in one of the gardens that was definitely, it was planted there because it was around, you know, it was surrounded by mulch or stone or something like that. They had Queen Anne's lace in the garden. And I chuckled because I thought that was interesting to me because, of course, it grows on the side of our highways and everything here. It is most would consider it a weed. You would rarely, if ever, I don't know that I've ever seen it in somebody's garden here.
Planted.
Yeah. Yeah, but somebody had specifically planted it in their garden, and it really is rather pretty. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, I thought that quite often we want to plant in our gardens what doesn't grow easily, and we want to find ways to grow it.
Well, that kind of takes us back to last week when we had special guest with us. Rick Gray was talking about native plants. Generally speaking, the horticultural world has not appreciated the native plants. They've considered them, you know, just boring and ordinary. So whether it was goldenrod or Queen Anne's lace or just so many of the things that are really tough and withstand very, you know, hard environmental conditions, like you're saying, you know, in ditches and roadsides, you know, think of ditch lilies, right? You know, which are a daylily and they're orange and they're really tall, but they're nothing special because they're too easy to, like, you don't have to really do anything.
They're common,
They grow by themselves. So all the energy and the money and the effort went into the exotics, you know, what's so cool coming out of Japan, particularly the United Kingdom, where there's, again, so much gardening going on and also so much development of a new species. So, of course, what do? Those Brits, they come to Canada, they take our goldenrod, they take it back to the UK, they mess around with it a bit, select it for bigger flowers, patent it, and then we buy it.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, nothing wrong with our goldenrod, but now there are so many different kinds. And if you remember, you know, from the book that we were talking about last week, and you go to Solidago, which is goldenrod, which there's about 6 or 7 native species of goldenrod right here in Ontario. Okay. So don't buy it. You shouldn't have to buy it. You should be able to get some from your neighbor. Or, you know, lots of times people do transplant more and more with the native plants. They'll transplant from a field or from the edge of the forest or even from inside the forest if you yourself have those conditions back in your garden.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I guess the word is common, right? We generally, as human beings, we like things in life that aren't common.
Right.
And so, if something is, we take great pride in being able to grow something that is unique, and I guess even challenging for some people. You know,
well, and it's funny too because as part of that thinking that you're mentioning, that exotic stuff, I remember when I was in university, we learned about this prize that I forget who had put up the money, but it was a big chunk of change for the first person who could come up with a white marigold.
Oh.
Right? Because marigolds are very easy to grow, very common,
yellow
and orange, traditionally, with sometimes some brown flecks and, you know, some kind of bicolors, but no pure white. And so the challenge was on and people were out there trying to create white marigolds. Or, you know, because the paler the yellow, you get to like an ivory colored marigold, but not a pure white one.
Pure white.
And it's not about a genetic modification. It's not radiating. It's growing and crossing back and forth, breeding, just like Mendel and his peas, crossing back and forth to get something that's what you're looking for. So that, you know, eliminating the color and concentrating on the lack of color. It's
fascinating. Yeah. And never considered a white marigold. That is a juxtaposition, as it were, considering the name of it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
okay. You know what? I do believe we're getting some callers on the line, but we got lots of room. So give us a call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. I would love to give out a set of these this morning to a first-time caller, okay? So if you've never called, now is the time. Okay, so we are going to take a break, and we'll be right back right here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on this 25th of January, which is pretty hard to believe, eh? We're almost through our first month of 2025. It is the 25th day of the 2025 year.
Yeah. Good point.
There you go. Okay, we're going to go to our first caller. We have Ann on the line from Hagersville. Welcome to The Garden Show, Ann. Hey there, Ann. How you doing?
Morning.
Oh, well, you know what? We'll go to our next caller then and see if we can get Ann all sorted out. We have Pat on the line from Simcoe. Welcome to The Garden Show, Pat.
Thank you. My question is that I was infected with that boxwood, whatever that bug was last summer, and I never actually saw the little worm things on there, but there was quite a few moths, and they seemed to die back. I got some BTK, which was recommended, and sprayed them as per the packaging, and then after a heavy rain. But I'd like to know when I should start in the spring.
Okay, good question. We haven't talked about the box tree moth in a while. Okay, so what you saw, the little moths. So the moths were the adult of the insect, which has a juvenile phase, which is a tiny, tiny little caterpillar or larva.
I never did see them. I looked and looked and looked. I never did see them, but I would notice on occasion the little moths flying around. So I would go back out and spray again. And they did seem to come back. They're on the way back, basically. But I need to know when to start in the spring. And should I topsoil or put some good soil around them to start them off again this spring, like to help feed the boxwood?
Sure. It's always a good idea. Not so much topsoil, but we would call it top dressing with organic material. So with compost and manure as an example. Now, you're not going to raise the level around your boxwood substantially. Over the years, the soil probably has washed away to some extent. So you definitely want to make sure the roots are covered. And, you know, you're adding anywhere from sort of half an inch, 3/4 of an inch of well-composted manure or a good quality, you know, organic-based media. But the box tree moth, The larvae are very small. That's why you didn't see them. They're also really well camouflaged. They're mostly green, but they have a little bit of black and white on them. So they really, really fit in nicely into the boxwood shrubbery, so they're hard to see. Bottom line is, you're going to start really looking, depending on when spring arrives, and you might even want to get yourself a magnifying glass, because that will help to see the larvae. The eggs are going to hatch. The larvae are going to emerge. They're going to start eating. And of course, those moths are flying around, the adults, to lay more eggs. The right. BTK should be coming out of your cupboard and be ready to use the instant you see any eating, any webbing, or any larvae on the plants. Could be May, could be June. Just kind of depends how our spring goes.
Okay, good. Thank you. And I am a first-time caller.
Oh, there you go.
Welcome.
There we are. Pat, welcome. Don't be a stranger.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. And thanks for the tip.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank you for the other questions that the other callers have asked in the last few weeks, because they answered all my questions. So thank you very much.
That is. Yeah, do call again. Thanks very much, Pat.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
And I do think we have got Anne back on the line. So, well, from Hagersville, welcome to the Garden Show, Anne.
Thank you. I'm calling.
Morning.
What's going on in your world today, Anne? What's going on? What do you got for Charlie?
I got a question. Today they're celebrating Robbie Burns Day. My paternal grandmother's people came from Scotland. I know the blue thistle was the emblem of Scotland. Was that due to the fact that it was readily available, or was it because my Scots relatives were very frugal and didn't want to have to spend a lot of money gathering up their emblem for special occasions?
It is interesting, and Dean might know more about this because he's quite the Robbie Burns guy, but it is, the Scottish thistle is considered beautifully bold. It's the oldest recorded national flower. It's very well known, obviously, and easily recognized. It's there's a whole bunch of legends and that surround the thistle. I will tell you one quickly that I just noticed here on the web. So the story is that in the 13th century, a Viking force came ashore somewhere along the coast of Scotland, and they planned to creep up on the Scottish clansmen and Highlanders and overcome them while they slept. So they had this idea of creeping up in the dark. Well, of course, the stealth, in order to stay so quiet, they had to go barefoot. So, you know, no boots, no foot coverings. Well, of course, that didn't really work because there's thistles everywhere. And they were screaming and crying out in pain and woke up all the sleeping Highlanders. And, of course, the Viking force did not succeed.
I like
so there
that.
You go, our little story about thistles. I didn't know that one.
There you go. It goes on and on, this story. So, you know, 13th century, in 1470, during the reign of King James, it became an integral part of the Scotland coat of arms. So that's the thistle. 1500, in the marriage seems to have been the inspiration behind the poem entitled The Thistle and the Roi. The Roi, the rose, the thistle and the rose. Penned by William Dunbar. Anyway, it goes on and on. There's a long, long history with the thistles. And, of course, we have our own native thistle here in Canada. It looks very similar to my eye, but I'm sure there are some differences.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, dokie. Does that answer your question there, Anne?
It does. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
You as well. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Dean's going to be donning the kilt later in the day and maybe chowing down on some yummy haggis.
Yeah. Yeah, going to an event this evening in nearby Meaford. They've got a group called the Tartan Terrors playing, which ironically, the fellow who is a brother and sister who started that group a couple of decades ago, and they've played all over the world. And oddly enough, I met them when I started community theater, like back in the mid 80s. And so we've known each other for years, although I haven't seen Ian in probably a couple of decades. But we met about 40 years ago, and he's been doing this. And his sister Ellen passed a few years ago, but Ian is still at it and has got a group. And they, as I say, they play on all the continents and all sorts of Highland festivals. And so, so I'll be there having some fun with the crowd before the show. Don and my kilt on this Brabrick Moonlick Nick to Nick.
Do you actually own a kilt?
I do.
You do. Is it a special? Is it a Holland tartan?
It is not. No, I do not have any Scottish that I know of in my lineage. And on my mother's side, I'm, you know, Polish, Czech, German. On my father's side, British. Back in my 20s in the Hamilton area, I did a couple of Robbie Burns shows and really didn't know a whole lot about it before that. And then when you start to dive into the music, I was in the show with three other people, two females, one other male, and there's some beautiful, beautiful music. And the guys in the Scottish, we're the ones, the gentlemen are the ones that get to wear the fanciest stuff. Yeah. You know, by comparison, the ladies are usually not nearly as ornate. You know, it's sort of like the cardinal.
I was going to say, cardinal, like birds.
Like birds, yeah.
Yeah, in general, males do the big plumage, the big show, the beautiful colors, the size of them. Yeah. It's all, and it's interesting watching now at this time of year, courtship has begun. The birds, the males are flaunting and trying to convince those females that they're the best and they should be hanging with them. And it has definitely started in my yard, because I have quite a lot of flocks of birds here.
Yeah, they come and go here. I look out. And we have moments where we have, you know, four or five of the doves dominating the feeders. Mm-hmm. And then this morning, as I said, I looked out and I laughed because all the squirrels were, you know, not in the feeders, thankfully. They rarely get up there, but just all cleaning up down below. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden the black-capped chickadees were darting down one after another. And we have a cardinal pair that comes by, and I've got a downy woodpecker that I see from time to time. And so that's generally what I'm seeing these days.
Juncos. So. I've got a lot of juncos. They're little blackbirds. They're like the size of a chickadee, but they're black. It's like they're wearing a tuxedo, black on the back, white on the breast. And they hang out right where I am in my office right now. I have a feeder out in front of my office and shrubbery, and they love it in there because I can see all the shrubs moving as I'm sitting here, because they're down there. They're basically ground feeders. A lot of the birds prefer to either take a seed and take it down to the ground to eat it or eat from the ground. You know, the doves being an example, cardinals as well. And so it's just really cute. They do hang out, and when it's inclement weather, it's lovely for them to be able to get inside some shrubs, because then they don't get as much wind blowing them around and you know, snow piling up on top of them. And I take my Christmas tree after Christmas, you know, when it's done, my cut Christmas tree, and I drag it outside and I put it at the base of one of the bird feeders, and the juncos live inside that tree. Like they just love it. It's a great little hiding spot for them. Yeah. And then seeds fall down and they just, you know, flit around and eat whatever falls. Yeah. And they knock stuff to the ground too.
And of course, you know what, I'll mention, remember I sent you a picture last week of what I saw on the way home, but first let me give out the numbers. 416-360-0740. 1-866-740-4740. Of course, we were in studio last week, and then on the way home, I didn't have to go through Barry on the way home. I sort of skirt around it, and just happens that the route that I took a left turn, and I looked up on this road sign, and there was an owl sitting there on top of the sign. In the middle of the day, and so I stopped the car on the side of the road and I turned it around and I was across the street. And then I actually, I got out of my vehicle and I walked across the street carefully. And at that point, because I watched from across the street initially, because I was afraid that it was going to fly away. And indeed, it didn't stay too long when I crossed the street, even though it was about 40 feet away. But I did manage to get a couple of pictures, and I have yet to identify it. But it was just so interesting because they are nocturnal. You just rarely see them out, and it was like right on a road sign.
Yeah, so waiting for a mouse or something. Yeah, and I find owls are so well camouflaged. It's like, number one, it's dark when you're looking for them, but number two, they're just their plumage and bark and branches all just blend so beautifully. So that was a good spot, a good eye spotting by you for sure.
I've got to I'm going to send the picture to Paul Oliver and just see if he can tell me what it is.
Oh yeah.
And so I thought, you know, he will probably know, being you know. urban nature store guy. So
he knows his birds.
He knows his birds. Yeah. So I'm gonna see if he can tell me what it is that I saw. I'm sure I could put it through some kind of an app or something like that. But he'll
know right away.
Yeah.
You know what the best birds I find for to kind of sneak up on them, and you don't even really need to sneak, are woodpeckers. They are just so brave. They are. You can almost get like to touch them. And I have three kinds here. I've got the little hairies. Well, sorry, the downy woodpecker are smaller. Yep. The hairies are bigger. And then I've got one I've never seen before, but I've got it here in my garden, is a red-headed woodpecker. So its entire head is bright red. So it's black and white body.
Like Woody Woodpecker.
Yeah, like pure red. And so like shocking to the eye. Like you can't miss them. They are just so bright. And so it's called a red-headed woodpecker. Yeah.
Again, you know what? I dare say that we regard birds in the same way we regard plants that we were talking about, because we don't get a kick as much out of the common ones when they come all the time. Mm. But of course, the ones that we talk about that were most beloved are the ones that we rarely see. Mm. You know, if we see something really unique, we go out of our minds, we're grabbing for our cameras because we have something.
Put it on my list, life list.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, we have a caller on the line. We've got Mary calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Oh, thank you. Good morning to both of you. Charlie
morning.
And Dean. Okay. In case I forget, Dean, I used your method. I watered my orchid yesterday, and I did when I got on last time, and the orchid expert said to put in a wooden stick, like a popsicle stick or something, to check the moisture. It works. But I thought, this is a long time, and it kind of looked like there was very little. So, again, I found a small pail. I only have a 6-inch orchid and that teeny tiny one, you know, the original one, 4-inch or whatever. And so I put in some fertilizer because I hadn't done it since, early January or December. And I plunged it into the bucket for about 10 minutes or more. So it's actually two questions. How, Charlie, do you get them out of the water? I took them out and let them sit on my dish drainer so that they could, drain as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But the whole operation, other than being frustrated and stopping for about one time 5 minutes and then 10, most of the bark, especially from the 6-inch pot,
it floats,
was in the water. And of course, I wanted to save the water to water my other plants. And trying to get it out was like impossible. Charlie, that's the second time I did it from what you said. I will never do it again.
I know. I hear your frustration because there's now you have to get all that bark out of the water and back into the pot, really. So, and I've done the same as you, and then, cursed myself for doing that and used like a tea strainer to strain all the bark out of the pail and then back into the pot around the roots of the orchid. You don't jam that bark in tight. It's just a very loose layer and the bark is only in the pot with the orchid to help stabilize the plant. Otherwise, it'll fall out, right? And it also does help hold some moisture. So when I've dunked my orchids that are in bark only, one of two things. One is I don't actually put the pot underground or underwater. I slowly lower the pot, lower and lower, and then you can see the water come up inside the pot because you'll see the bark start to float. And I just hold the pot just to the lip. So the water level and the lip of the pot end up the same. And there I am doing a really good job. Air bubbles are coming out of the pot. And then you can even, if there's room and it's possible, kind of wrap your hands around, stabilize that bark to stay in the pot and just have it sit there. And I don't do 10 minutes. It might be a minute by the time I've got full saturation of the bark in the pot. And the plant, of course, can't go underwater unless there's some way to really cover the top of the pot and hold that bark in place without the big frustration of gathering the bark afterwards. But it is an excellent way, one of the best ways, as far as I know, to properly water your orchids and really have happy orchids. If you do that, you you see such a difference. The leaves are dark green and glossy, flower nonstop, good healthy looking roots. I spent about an hour yesterday with a friend of mine yesterday evening repotting her orchids with her, which have been so neglected and so badly watered. And they were just, we cut off 90% of the roots because they're all just shriveled and black.
Well, yes. How do you know? You said only a few minutes. The bark is brown and it never turns like wet. I've been trying this for years now.
Yeah. I mean, well, okay, so it, because the bark is from evergreens, typically it's a fir bark mix. It does have natural oils in the bark, which is what we call, you know, hydrophobic. It doesn't allow water. It doesn't like water. It doesn't allow water to penetrate. But you know what? It's the best you'll do. The orchid does not want to be underwater for any extended period of time because it does need oxygen. It does need air, even around the roots. So it's not a perfect science. We have to move to the Amazon rainforest if we really want to grow our orchids, or any rainforest to grow our orchids perfectly. But just that idea. Of course, that's where we spritz our orchids with a little spritzer, just keeping the humidity up and keeping the moisture around the roots and never cutting off roots that are green and healthy, only removing the brown and the shriveled and the black.
Okay,
thanks very much for the call there, Mary. Got to run a break, okay? But we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on the Garden Show here. It is the 25th of January. Yeah, it's Robbie Burns Day. And, of course, the other thing that's worth noting, though, is that it's the last weekend of January, and that's hard to believe. Next Saturday will be the 1st of February, which is craziness.
And then, of course, it's Valentine's Day in the middle of February. And remember, the great backyard bird count. Starts on Valentine's Day, Friday, the 14th of February. And we can talk more about that. We generally talk about this count every year because it is a really fun way as citizens to get involved, not only to support citizen science, but also just to be more aware of your local birds.
Yes, indeed. I have a quick question before we go to our next caller, and that's about watering. This is something that, you know, we've talked about during the summer months that I and you, we have used like dehumidifier water. I will use that to water my plants with, and so I empty that and I use that, and I'll actually use it outside in my bird bath as well. That's the water I'll use, right? So, but of course, in the winter, I'm not running the dehumidifier because it's dry in here. So I found myself wondering the other day if there's any merit, or maybe it's the exact opposite, to bringing in a bucket of snow and letting that melt and using that as my watering water.
There is, yeah. I mean, I think that it comes down to the cleanliness of your snow. Right. But honestly, yeah, so the snow falls through the air and it does pick up particles out of the air. Tiny microscopic particles. A lot of it is sulfur. That's what acid rain is, right? Okay. So acid rain is because of sulfur in the air that bonds to the water molecules and comes down and drops. So our rain does tend to be on the acidic side. It's not perfectly neutral, and our snow would be the same. It'd be a lot of work to melt that much snow and then bring it to room temperature, of course, because you don't want to put icy water. But what I find at my house, because I'm on a well, if I use my filtered water, because I have soft water filtered, that's not good for the plants, too much salt, right? I've also got reverse osmosis water. That's not good for the plants because it's virtually got nothing.
Nothing.
Right. But if I use my well water, my plants are way happier. Now, I would never drink that well water, but it obviously has iron and sulfur and all kinds of, you know, micro nutrients in it. And my plants, right from seedlings right up to fully grown plants, they are so happy with just raw well water.
Well water. Okay. Cool. Okay. Let's go to our next caller, which is very interesting. Of course, you can listen to us anywhere on planet Earth by going to zoomerradio.ca. And maybe this is what Carmen is doing. Carmen is calling from Uruguay, South America. So welcome to The Garden Show, Carmen.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, good morning, nice people. I just listened to you guys from Uruguay, South America, like another year, a couple years ago. I did call with was the other first gentleman. So the reason I'm calling, I'm just telling you, I'm listening to the show, and last night we had so many Lady of the Night blooming, so beautiful.
Oh,
my God. Looks like a bride for a like wedding dresses from the ladies. Oh my gosh, so beautiful, and the smell and everything, and so many different kinds: the hibiscus, red, orange, purple color, light lavender color. Oh my gosh!
Yeah. Wow.
Very hard here.
And these are all in your garden.
Yes, I'm working in my garden here. I'm working in Toronto. I work here. I'm going back home in May.
That's beautiful. So it's pretty tropical where you are, I guess. No snow at your place.
Yes, it is. It was 38, 40, 25, 27 degrees. The heat.
Wow.
Yeah, but we live right in the, it's very high. We get all the wind from the seaside, and it's very, very, very nice. But now we're having another kind of problem. It's killing to the whole country. Some kind of bug, they call it picudo, is killing the whole entire palm trees. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oh. It's so sad. So sad how this animal insect is killing the plants, the palms. It's terrible.
Plants on the farms or forests?
What is it?
What kind of plants are getting killed?
Palm trees.
Oh, palm trees.
Palm trees. No.
Palm
trees. Wow. Oh, that is horrible. Well, I'm sure there's and people working on trying to figure out what that is. I mean, I don't know anything about it. I've never been to Uruguay. I've been in South America, but just down to the southern Bolivian border. And Chile, that's as far south as I have ever in South America. So very cool. Thank you for calling us and saying hello. You know what? You should be getting some garden wings, I think, Carmen.
Oh, yes.
Because he didn't give me nothing. Nothing he gave me. Okay, come on, guy. Give me my wing.
There you go.
Well, and thanks for sharing that vision of lots of Lady of the Night in bloom. Everybody here is drooling thinking about that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, you should see.
Okay, I'm already looking forward to our next call from you, Carmen. Okay, but right now, I've got to go to a break.
The nurseries here. The nurseries, they're miles and miles. The nurseries are beautiful. Okay,
so
thank you for accepting my call. Okay.
Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show. And, of course, that was really interesting having a call from Uruguay.
That's a first.
Yeah.
On The Garden Show, we've never had a call from Uruguay, so thank you, Carmen. Made my day.
So it sounds like she lives part of the year, part of every year in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So I think probably when she called the first time, which probably was in the Frank years, then because she said she called before, it was maybe when she was in Toronto.
Or maybe it wasn't The Garden Show. Maybe she called another show on AM 740.
It's possible. Yeah, possible. And now we're going to get to go ahead. Did you want to say?
No, I was just going to say there was a garden show before I started doing it with Frank, but that was 17 plus years ago. So maybe,
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to go to somewhere equally as exotic because, of
that's
course,
us.
This is where the telephone help gets started. Yeah, and so we're going to Brantford now. We got Ellen on the line from Brantford. Welcome to The Garden Show, Ellen.
Thank you very much.
Morning.
How are you? What do you got for Charlie?
I have a Christmas cactus, which has been beautiful for about the last 5 years, and all of a sudden the leaves are all dull and wilting where they were waxy and thick before, and I don't know what's wrong with it.
And has anything changed? Have you moved it from where it used to be?
No, I haven't moved it, but I am wondering, pardon me, if it's got some kind of an insect infestation. because I've had trouble on other plants with scale.
Oh, well, scale is very visible. I mean, it is possible. Scale will go after Christmas cactus. They'll be underneath, most likely. And, of course, you can't really lift up the fronds. So you have to get down on your hands and knees and look up under the plant.
Yes.
If that's...
It's become very dull and flat in appearance, where the leaves were very shiny before. But every now and then, one of the leaves has a little bit of shininess to it. It's just all limp. I don't know what happened because I've hardly had to do anything with it for 5 years. It's just really easy maintenance.
I mean, the reason why Christmas cactus lose their luster and become wrinkly and dull looking, usually it's from overwatering and that we've got some root rottage happening. Is it possible that anything's changed with the watering techniques?
Yes, that could possibly be it. And would you suggest I might repot it?
What I would do is just don't water it at all. How big of a pot is it in now?
It's in about a 7-inch diameter plastic pot.
Mm-hmm. You could repot it now or, you know, wait a month kind of thing. Spring is an excellent time for repotting. Plants are excited and growing and days are getting longer. So we really start to notice a real difference in their growth habits. For now, I would not water it at all. If you have a moisture meter, because that'll tell you what's going on down deeper in the pot, get that out, check out what the moisture levels are down there. Repotting ultimately can be a good thing to do, but it's also very stressful. So if the plant is stressed anyway, I'd kind of minimize the stress by waiting. Wait a few weeks. Do not water during those weeks. Keep it in that sunny window. Turn it 180 degrees every week or so that it's balanced in terms of the light hitting the plant and whatever growth. You are probably going to lose some chunks. It'll break off some pieces. They'll fall to the ground. Look closely. Make sure there's no obvious insects that you can pick off, because scale you can remove by hand. And no fertilizer, nothing. Just kind of talk to it and let it be. And yes, maybe you will need to lay it all out and repot it, but I'd try and wait till March if you can.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank
you very much, Ellen. Yeah, and with that, my goodness, we are quickly running out of showtime here.
Yeah. So amazing. We do this every Saturday. Like we just need more time.
So again, this coming weekend, next weekend is the Orchid Show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the weekend after that is the Bird Count.
That's right. So the Valentine's Day weekend, and along with a few CD Saturdays. And then if you really want to look ahead, February 22nd, which is a Saturday again, is the Get the Jump on Spring event. It's an annual event at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. It's all about vendors and plants and seeds and cool tools and just fun stuff that way. We do get itchy. We want to get in our garden. So it's a good way to meet up with fellow gardeners and see what's new, what's going on in the world of gardening. And we can talk more about that in the future, you know, trends in what's happening in the world of gardening as we get into it. But yeah, soon it'll be time to start thinking about seeds and that sort of thing, but not yet for most of us.
Okay. And why don't you quickly, before we go, just mention, if you want to, we can listen to the podcast version of your show as well, if you've missed one.
Absolutely. Every show is podcast via your favorite, whether it's Spotify or iTunes or whatever. You'll find The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin available. All the shows, 18 years worth of archive shows are available. So check them out. Nice thing to listen to when you're puttering around in the garden. Thanks, everybody. And thanks so much for Call from Uruguay. Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Owen. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.